information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, May 30th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend and that it was long enough for all that you wanted to get done. Coming up this hour, watching out for our waterways. Beyond the roads and the skies, we can't forget the water corridors through which we send all kinds of cargo and corn and soybeans and other agricultural exports. It's not going to do us much good if that infrastructure along the waterways falls apart on the Mississippi River or our Great Lakes ports. So we'll talk a bit about that with our friend from Lincoln County, dairy farmer Hans Breitenmoser. We'll also talk about a new U.S. Supreme Court ruling that appears to give a green light to polluters. Unfortunately, not the world's biggest surprise given the current makeup of the U.S. Supreme Court. If you missed it in our last hour, all about putting together a Wisconsin bucket list for your summer road trips, you can go to upnorthnewswi.com and find that story there, along with so much more. Also, if you missed the show, catch it anytime by subscribing to us as a podcast. Apple, Spotify, all the usual places have us. So does the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, and this show has you as well. If you'd like to comment or ask a question about anything in the news, 844-967-2789, and radio at upnorthnewswi.com is the email address. And I should also mention Up North News, if you look on our Facebook page, and for any of our social media, look for Up North News WI. But on the Facebook page, we're running a story that we'd run earlier as well, but talking about Wisconsin bucket lists, 8 cheese factories that you can visit around Wisconsin. And then our readers also put in some of their own suggestions as well. So look for that on our website. Aaron Zommers is standing by producing this fine radio program down in Madison. Aaron, what does one do in Madison when you are just hanging out there? You're going to go back up to Manitowoc next weekend. So when it's just you, I can't imagine you just sat and watched the Indy 500 and, you know, the U.S. Senior Open Golf Championship. There had to be more to it than that.
Well, there was more, but not much more. I did not do those things, but I did watch a solid amount of TV over the weekend. My roommate and I were watching Avatar: The Last Airbender, the animated kids show. Because I hadn't seen it, right. And it's actually really good.
Okay, all right. Oh, you have a correction to make as well from our music segment. Whose birthday is it today?
It is not Topper Head-On's birthday, because I don't remember who told me his name is pronounced like that. It's very much not. It's Topper Heaton.
From The Clash.
Yes, drummer of The Clash.
Just wanted to get that right. All right. Sounds good. We'll probably hear a little ditty there before too long. And who hasn't used the word ditty when referring to any song coming from The Clash, right? Don't you hate it when it takes national media way too long to figure out what's painfully obvious? And I'm not limiting that to the political stuff like Trump being a congenital liar, or that it took nearly a decade of gerrymandered maps from mainstream press to finally accurately call them gerrymandered. In this case, I'm talking about the economy. Here's this morning's headline and subhead in the New York Times. Companies push prices higher, protecting profits, but adding to inflation. Corporate profits have been bolstered by higher prices, even as some of the costs of doing business have fallen in recent months. The story notes that problems created by the pandemic and by Russia's invasion of Ukraine are reduced or better baked into economic outlooks. And yet the story says, quote, many big businesses have continued raising prices at a rapid clip. Yeah, we know. And it goes on, saying that some of the world's biggest companies have said they do not plan to change course and will continue increasing prices or keep them at elevated levels for the foreseeable future. It has cushioned corporate profits and could keep inflation robust, contributing to the very pressures that were used to justify surging prices. The average company in the S&P 500 stock index increased its net profit margin from the end of last year, according to the data and research firm FactSet. Now look, many on the right are still somehow blaming economic stimulus payments. long after they've run out. The theory being that if people are still spending but grumbling about it, then it can't possibly be the company's fault if they're paying more, if we roll them over a barrel. That's hardly a way to run an economy. You can't base capitalism on, you know, the consumer doesn't look poor enough to us, so let's keep cranking up that stock price at his or her expense. At some point, it becomes price gouging or even war profiteering, given that they're willing to screw over the same consumers who are helping pay to defend Europe from an expansion of Russian military aggression, the thing that put a crimp on our supply chains shortly, you know, after the worst of the pandemic. I'm not advocating that we can do anything about it at a government level, other than to note that any effort to increase taxation on the wealthiest corporations was lost in the debt ceiling resolution over the weekend. The whole point is simply to bring this up to you, the consumer, to let you know what the motivation is behind this so that A, you're not blaming the wrong people, despite what some politicians want to tell you, and B, so that you can make a more informed choice. I've changed some of my, you know, consumer preferences, you know, as I learn different things about corporations, their motivations for pricing or what they do with their funding. And you should know to do the same thing. And that the inflation that we're seeing out there right now isn't something that's just created by supply chains and war, but decisions that are made in corporate boardrooms too. All right, we're going to get into waterways, infrastructure, and more before the end of this hour. And then Chad Holmes joins us closer to 8 o'clock. Back with more after this. You're up north.
The snow glows white on the mountain tonight. Not a footprint to be seen.
Oh, we're not doing the whole sing-along of Let It Go here, just letting you know that it's Adina Menzel's birthday today. Your first place Milwaukee Brewers, yes, first place, despite losing 3-4 to the Giants over the weekend, did avoid that sweep with a 7-5 win on Sunday. They are on the road starting in Toronto tonight and then Cincinnati later on in the week. It is 57 up on the Eagle River chain of lakes and 57 degrees in Waukesha as well. And now for that full weatherology forecast, Michael Cairo is with us to tell us about a work week, a shorter work week, a warm work week, and one where, you know, Michael, I and others are starting to look at the fields where the corn has made it those first couple of inches and saying, all right, little guys, hang in there, because that soaking rain they might need doesn't appear to be coming anytime soon. Michael, good morning.
Yeah, we'll have some hit or miss opportunities for some showers and storms over the next few days. Today, at least, the bulk of that activity is staying across the far northwestern portions of the state, areas like Amory, Baldwin, especially in areas to the northwest of about the Eau Claire vicinity for today. Much of the remainder of the state, though, looking to stay dry with a decent amount of sunshine, expecting highs into the upper range of the 80s as far north as Wausau for today. Likewise, Madison upper 80s, even over to near Oshkosh. Still not a real humid type heat out there for today. We'll have those dew points in the 40s and 50s, so more of a dry heat yet for today, especially for the eastern two-thirds of the state. We'll start to have those dew points, though, creeping up into the 60-degree range across the far west, so that humidity is starting to become more noticeable, especially in areas like Amory and Baldwin, where we'll be contending with those scattered showers and storms for today. Otherwise, for tonight, still the best chance for those showers and storms, mainly for northwestern portions of Wisconsin. Overnight lows in the lower 60s from Eau Claire and points westward, upper 50s to lower 60-degree readings down to near Wisconsin Rapids, including Madison, Oshkosh, and Milwaukee for tonight. And then by the time we get to your Wednesday, most of the state picking up at least a chance for some, again, hit-or-miss type showers and storms, but still not looking all that great as far as the rainfall coverage. A pretty warm statewide on Wednesday, highs upper 80s, even some lower 90s a possibility for Madison, over to near Milwaukee, as well as Wisconsin Rapids. Thursday, pretty much the same story goes. A bit more humid even into eastern portions of the state by Thursday, which could touch off again some hit-or-miss type showers and storms. Summer heat is still in full swing, upper 80s, close to that 90-degree mark statewide, except in areas right along the lakeshore. I think Milwaukee will be closer to the lower to middle range of the 80s there with some lake breezes on Thursday. And even to wrap up your work week on Friday, much the same, well into the 80s, close to 90, with that outside chance for an isolated storm.
You know, we always talk about Memorial Day bringing the unofficial begin of summer, but weather-wise, it is most decidedly summer-like to kick things off. Michael Kaver from Weatherology. Thanks, Michael, so much. Have a great day.
Have a good one.
All right, let's take a sec here to talk about our waterways and a setback from the U.S. Supreme Court that decided to curb federal regulations for wetlands and the far-reaching implications that it could have, not just for, you know, our rivers, lakes, and streams, but for habitat, for the quality of our land. It really is something that can open up more of the nation to water pollution and also make us more vulnerable to floods as wetlands are, frankly, abused more. What the court did late last week was narrow the federal government's authority to regulate wetlands, especially from the Environmental Protection Agency. Again, Congress created the Environmental Protection Agency to have it take care of our environment and have clean water. And yet somehow the court read into it an overstepping of authority in deciding that they were going to change the definition of wetlands and their proximity to more navigable bodies of water. The court said that the federal government only has jurisdiction over lands that have a, quote, continuous surface connection with other regulated waters, such as lakes or rivers. In practice, that means wetlands don't meet that definition and therefore can be developed unless the state has its own requirements. And so one former Clean Water Act litigation specialist at the EPA said, essentially, it means people will no longer need a permit in some states to fill wetlands. If you're a developer and you buy a piece of farmland that had a bunch of wetlands on it, and if it wasn't immediately next to the river, you could probably just go out and start filling it unless you have a state that requires it. And that goes along with what the Trump administration was doing previously in terms of cutting back protections for wetlands. Now, I recall running for legislature in 2006, and this was a topic back then because there was a major employer in Arcadia that wanted permission to construct a building or something that would require filling in some wetlands. And the part of the conversation was whether that should be mitigated. In other words, if you fill in, say, you know, a 4-acre parcel of wetlands, do you have to create or do something to expand the health of 4 acres worth of wetlands somewhere else? And can you do that? It's not like the migrating waterfowl, for example, you know, get an alert on their Apple Watches, you know, on their wings saying, no, stop over here instead. And we got condescension and the sarcasm from people on the right who said, well, go ahead and try to float a canoe, you know, in this, you know, they would refer to it as a ditch. And it just gets more into this battle between those who understand and respect science and those who don't, who mock science. You know, the wetlands are described by one professor of aquatic science at the University of Notre Dame, and I'm sure many others, Gary Lambert, he calls it, you know, the kidneys of the landscape. They have their own microbes and bacteria. They're great at, you know, detoxifying and converting certain nutrients into water. And that even if the wetland isn't directly touching a river or a lake, it is almost assuredly connected to groundwater that is. So that when you're poisoning a wetland, when you're filling it in, you are having an impact on the nearby navigable bodies of water. And look, we know this. Most of us know this. It's not that these justices on the U.S. Supreme Court don't know it. It's that they choose to ignore it and choose to side with polluters and corporations. Mark from Prairie du Sac is one of those folks who wants to comment on it. Mark, good morning.
Yeah, you just kind of pulled me into a thought line that where I grew up north there was a little tiny where the ditch had kind of widened out. And it actually did have a connection to, you know, the ditch led to a little creek. And that, but in the spring, there's a small little pool, ephemeral pool, that it was wet pretty much year round. But I mean, it was filled in the springtime. It was filled with tadpoles and salamander larvae, and it just is. What these people don't seem to understand is, like you said, I mean, that now they're authorizing companies to actually poison our water and or steal our water, and that. And these people seem to think they're immune to what may or may not happen. I mean, that do we want to have a society where I mentioned before is that during the late Roman Republic, I mean, all the elites had to have the nobles had to have a taster to taste their food to make sure it wasn't poisoned. Well, the Supreme Court just authorized, you know, companies to poison the citizenry. I mean, do these people think they're isolated from the poisons that these companies are dumping in the water in the first place? I mean, how are they assured that everything they get is pure? I mean, these guys would like to roll back the over 100-year-old Pure Food and Drug Act that was established in the early 1900s.
They would go exactly. And if none of these folks have read Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, you know, I think that honestly, if you're going to have required reading, you know, at a certain age in middle school, I think, if not high school, start with that and realize that that is something we can come back to. Mark, thank you very much for the call. You know, wetlands are something that are important to prevent flooding. They are essentially a sponge able to absorb huge quantities of water so that they don't all flow downstream right away. You just had to look at what happened to Houston after Hurricane Harvey, where the flooding was exacerbated by wetlands removal around the city. As we've learned this as well from rivers, when in cities, when you turn rivers into basically concrete channels, again, you inhibit the ability of nature to do what it does best. Which is not always try to kill us as much as we joke about it, but to actually, you know, protect the environment and therefore us around ourselves with these mechanisms. Now, again, this I want to take on a tired talking point here, and that is those who say, well, this must, you know, these are people who say we must never cut down a single tree. You know, we must never fill in a single wetland, no matter what. And again, don't go to the extremism on the argument. The argument is about the permitting process, about having people who are experts in the field, quite literally, take a look at various cases and see if there is the possibility for contamination of the groundwater, for contamination of the nearby river or lake. Have it be assessed by experts rather than it's mine and I will do with it what I want with it. Damn the consequences. You know, I had to run into this a lot as a lawmaker when people talked about something called, you know, smart growth or any kind of, you know, planning. When, you know, they say, well, why do I need that? I'm not going to, you know, you put a hog farm on my land. And my response was always, well, no, but somebody might put a mega hog farm on the land next to you. And without rules about permitting and development, those things are going to happen more often. To get off on a tangent for just a moment about that, it happened in one part of my Senate district where it was kind of, you know, a well away from any cities or villages, but this strip bar went up and people were outraged about it, that at this one little intersection on this highway, up went this strip club, and they said, can't you do anything about it? And I said, no. I said, the time to do something about it was when you were asked to adopt either smart growth or some kind of other long-range development plan, and you called it a Soviet plot, you know, from communists, and you the whole time thought it was keeping you from filling in a small wetland and putting up a shed, but it's also the thing that keeps out the hog farm and the strip club. There's nothing wrong in a community with having a plan. But unfortunately, that planning that we count on from environmental experts was made a little bit tougher by this U.S. Supreme Court ruling. All right, we'll go from the wetlands next to these waterways to the waterways themselves and talk a bit with our friend Hans Breitenmoser about the way that agricultural products get to market outside of Wisconsin and whatever else we care to get into as we come out of the holiday weekend on this Tuesday morning, May the 30th. We'll be back. You're up north.
Coal never bothered me anyway.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Seven 33 on this Tuesday morning. Our friend Hans Breitenmoser joins us now from up near Merrill. Hans, how are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I've always, I don't think I've been up to your farm. I've seen you at plenty of events and things over the years, but so we just say Merrill, but I mean, where about you? North, south, east, west?
We're just west of Merrill on Joe Snow Road.
Okay, very nice. And as a dairy farmer and as somebody who's been active with Wisconsin Farmers Union and in political matters as well, you can probably help me make the transition from our discussion about wetlands to waterways. And keeping in mind that, again, farmers, like everything else, farmers come in all flavors. You have those who want to be good stewards of the land, and you have those who say, you know, I will dump this manure wherever I want to dump it. And thankfully that group, that latter group, while always a little too big, isn't as small, thankfully. You've got most farmers who, again, want to take care of what they've got.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think so. And yeah, I was listening in earlier in the conversation about wetlands, and it is the case that ag in general, I mean, we're, you know, as a group, always, you know, sometimes worried about what regulations we're going to face. But I think for the most part, that's why it's so important to allow science to do its thing and not have some of these things be completely driven by pure politics and the politics of the day. And it is tough sometimes because wetlands being the example of, you know, here's a piece of land that isn't doing me any good, but that doesn't mean it's not doing any good. We understand science tells us that in order to have, clean groundwater and clean surface water, we have to take care of the systems that create that for us.
I mean, after all, the Wisconsin idea was originally based on, you know, the university being able to provide expertise so that Wisconsin farmers were some of the best informed and most efficient out there. And obviously, it didn't always go well that farmers mm-hmm. thought that some Budinsky was there telling them what to do. But once you have that bond of trust and a little bit of faith in science, you can use the land in a way that is as close to win-win as possible. So making the move then from wetlands to waterways, Hans, what got me thinking about this was an article about infrastructure. And while we typically talk about, you know, roads and bridges and, you know, broadband and things like that, I saw this note that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers started work on lock number 25. And of course, there's a series of lock and dams all along the Mississippi River to get cargo downriver because, of course, there's elevation and, you know, the river, you're trying to avoid all those, you know, messy waterfalls. Barges aren't really good at waterfalls. But Lock 25, according to this report, had not undergone extensive repairs since it was built early in the 20th century. And the article noted that some 60% of all U.S. corn and soybean exports travel down the Mississippi River, and that as these locks, you know, aren't keeping up with the forms of transportation, there some of the gear and you know, mechanization of it, you know, date back again like 100 years. When you don't have an efficient system for moving your products to market, it means farmers are going to get less for that. So clearly, they have an investment in a waterways infrastructure that works well for them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, all these systems need to work together. One, it's all links in a chain, right? And so I can do my job well, but I'm directly impacted by the next person in the chain being able to do their job and having the resources and the infrastructure.
I was noting,
right. And we do. Go. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was noting a story through Wisconsin Watch, a story done through the Mississippi River Basin Ag and Water Desk, which comes from the University of Missouri School of Journalism. I wanted to get all the proper credits in there. But they note that about 175 million tons of freight travels on the Mississippi. And this particular article was about who should pay for these upgrades and whether it's something that, you know, we all pay for as part of general infrastructure, or should just the users pay for it, you know, the shipping companies, but then they would just pass it on to the farmers. And I'm not telling you that there's one right answer here. Of course there's not, but you know, the one wrong answer is to let the debate get in the way of getting any actual work done. At some point you have to have these things done, whether it's, you know, along the Mississippi River, or we have Great Lakes ports in Green Bay, in Milwaukee, in Superior, Duluth. I mean, just at the port of Milwaukee, they load 6,000 metric tons a day. They can hold 100 rail hopper cars, and they can store 1.7 million bushels of grain as they get set to use it. None of these things, Hans, go unnoticed by anybody who's in the business of producing something that depends on exports. And I can't imagine where Wisconsin farmers would be if our export markets, you know, were to take a sharp downturn.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. And again, it just has to do with maintaining infrastructure. I think it's reasonable to have debates on who bears the cost of that infrastructure. But one thing that I've noticed, you know, over the past umpteen years is that while we have more and more consolidation in some of these, you know, ag product industries as far as their distribution and their processing, and so farmers have fewer and fewer markets because of antitrust laws that haven't been enforced very well. You know, it's interesting that you know, if there's a lot of profit taking, you'd think that then these folks would be able to step up and take charge of maintaining that infrastructure. And I don't think that that's always the case. I think there's a little bit of a disconnect there.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. We kind of got into that early in the hour in talking about corporate profits and inflation, and frankly, the artificial level there. There are those who have said that the federal government should do less and less of the infrastructure on our rivers and lakes and in our other ports and such. But if you turn that all over to the private sector, you are just asking yourself to be gouged. And again, farmers know that as well as anybody, that this concentration of corporate power in the hands of a few, well, we keep saying it's going to hurt the farmer, but guess what? Anything that hurts the farmer is going to hurt the consumer in the end too.
Oh, absolutely. And again, we've seen that trajectory. And I think the other important thing to point out is that I think public policy and the public sector taking charge of some of these things, you automatically have a longer view, whereas corporations tend to have a very short view because their shareholders are looking, you know, for what's the 6-month profit, you know, and that's, you know, I can understand that, but it doesn't lend itself well to creating and investing in maintaining infrastructure that we need for the long term, because then there is this just, okay, but what does it do for me in the next quarter, you know, and that's not the right way to look at these things.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I want to look back now a week ago when I was finally able to have on Ruth Conniff and John Rosenau and Mercedes Falk about Ruth Conniff's book Milked and about Mexican immigrants on Wisconsin dairy farms. And you and I have talked about this, and we have had a guest on in this segment before talking about driver's licenses and things like that. And I wonder now, having had a chance to talk to John about, you know, the farmer perspective on immigrant labor. I keep saying Mexican. There may also be others from El Salvador and other Central American countries, but by and large from Mexico. And I wondered about your own impressions, you know, in light of Ruth's book and the greater attention that's being brought to it, and whether you think that, and I'm going to specifically tailor this toward Republicans at both the state legislative level and the congressional delegation level, if you see any daylight between the Republican Party orthodoxy that is anti-immigrant all the time, even though we need immigrants, you know, in order to have an economy, and then the viewpoint of, you know, we really need to start making some progress on reform. Are we starting to see any signs of that from the legislature, either in terms of driver's licenses or from the congressional delegation in terms of comprehensive reform? Or do we see a Republican Party, you know, in Wisconsin that is still very much in lockstep with that extreme anti-immigrant view?
It's tough, Pat, because I do think that there are plenty of conservatives in the circles that I run in sort of conventional ag that they get it. They get it from the standpoint that because they're working with immigrant groups, immigrant labor every day in their work, whether they're actually dairy farmers or implement dealers or dairy equipment people or people in the feed industry. I mean, because there are so many Hispanics working in the dairy industry, you can't pretend that this doesn't exist. So I think most of the conservatives in ag sort of understand that the presence of immigrant labor is not going to go away, and it's a huge component in how we get things done. It's the people who aren't inside of ag who are screaming the loudest, the biggest xenophobes that are unfortunately driving the conversation. You got to remember, ag is sort of ag's a small sector, and it is on the production side of things, but it has such a big impact on the economy. But I don't know. I guess it's just a matter of where people are in their daily lives. And and so I think it is just that noisy xenophobe group that unfortunately has their hands on the steering wheel of the entire party.
Here's my concern, and whether it turns into action, you know, who's to say, but you may have Republican legislators or members of Congress who, when you're talking to them privately, they're saying, yep, I understand, you know, we got to make this better. But then do they ever actually do anything about it? That is the cynical view of things. Mm-hmm. Then at the other end of the spectrum, I always think of somebody like Lyndon Johnson, who for his first couple of decades in Congress wasn't that much different than the Democratic voting bloc, which back then in the 1940s and 50s was, very much opposed to civil rights. But then LBJ and other Democrats in time said, look, we have to do something. And, you know, we're the ones who have to show leadership on this. And eventually they did, I would argue decades too late, but they finally did. And I guess that those are the green shoots I'm hoping to see, is that as long as Republicans are in a position of power, that they start to recognize that they have to show some leadership on this, or the economy that they always talk about, you know, being good stewards of is going to go through a rough patch. And I guess I'm always going to be talking to you and others and looking to see if we start to see some signs of that, or if it's still just all rhetoric at this point. And you don't have to give me any false hopes, but I'm always on the lookout for any sign of hope out there.
Well, and I think that's good, Pat, because we do have to be hopeful. That's how we move forward. If we had no hope, we just wouldn't be able to get out of bed in the morning, right? You have to have that sort of farmery hope that says stuff is going to come back out of the ground after I plant that seed. But it makes one wonder, because we'll use Wisconsin as the example. You know, as gerrymandered as these districts are, any Republican who says something about, you know, out loud about, you know, doing, you know, allowing people to get driver's licenses or what have you, I feel like there's always going to be somebody that's farther to the right that's going to primary them. And that's just the system that we're in. We need to change that system.
Yeah, we sure do. And we're not going to dwell on the weather because we're wrapping things up. But as I said to Michael Cairo earlier, we're thinking about you. We know the rain is needed. So we had the beautiful holiday weekend. Now we're all about rooting for the rain for the farmers.
All I need to do is cut some hay, Pat, and I can make it rain. That's usually how
that is definitely how it often works. Hans Breitenmoser, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks, Pat.
All right. We will be looking to talk to Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio in beautiful Wausau coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel
up ahead. First reminder, the Brewers are on the road this week in Toronto starting this evening and then Cincinnati. And you can hear the Brewers throughout the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3 and 1100 AM. Over in Richland Center, listen to 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. The Bucks introduced their new head coach over the weekend, Adrian Griffin. He turns 49 next month and had won a championship as an assistant coach in Toronto. Giannis Antetokounmpo is a big fan of his, and so we'll look and see if they can take the Bucks a little deeper into the postseason. Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio is with us now. Good morning, Chad. Hope you had a good holiday weekend.
Good morning, Pat. Wish it was longer.
it was gorgeous. My house looks decidedly different when you have one of your adult children and two little kids, ages 1 and 4. There are toys everywhere. It looks nothing like an empty nester place, but I've only stepped on a couple of toys, you know, in the dark, getting up at 4:30 to start a radio show. So far, so good.
Pretty dangerous though at once we get to where we are in our lives.
I've only stumbled once. I was chasing the four-year-old and I went down in a heap because again my legs don't move the way that they're supposed to. And when the four-year-old decides he's going to start running toward the street, you know, you got to move quick whether you like it or not. But I somehow managed to do that. But the other thing about having, you know, your kids or family back to visit, and they're kind of sneaky. They're down in the basement where the guest rooms are right now. And I come up to get a cup of coffee, and because there's always one more cup left, you know, for my 7 a.m. hour. And that pot's empty, Chad. So I'm running on Coca-Cola a little earlier this morning. But you do what you got to do. Hey, on a sports note, let me start at the professional level because I just mentioned the Bucks hiring a new head coach. What do you think of the possibility that with the Miami Heat now being in the NBA Finals and the Florida Panthers being in the Stanley Cup Finals, that, you know, in the next week and a half or 2 weeks, we could have Miami as the center of the winter sports professional universe?
Which is pretty crazy, but I mean, the thing that's really nuts is they're both number 8 seeds.
Right.
There's yeah. 8 teams in each conference that get into that is the lowest. The lowest number is to have both the major sports going on right now to have a number 8 seed make it, and both those teams knocked off the number 1 seed and just ripped the heart out of the favorite going into the playoffs. I mean, that's a thing you don't see that very often. I mean, boy, oh boy, and I was really surprised that Miami lost those 3 games, especially after Boston won that buzzer beater the other night, that Miami was able to go and close it out after having the wheels come completely off. And that's really something. We're not going to see that again, but you're right. I mean, winter sports Miami, I mean, doggone it. There's no karma if Florida's winning all these.
No, there really isn't.
We don't want Ron DeSantis being able to claim NBA and NHL championships. I mean, come on.
No. But, and again, the 8th seed, and not just the 8th seed, they had to lose the first playoff play-in game, you know, to fall down to the number 8 seed, knock off the Bucks. They knocked out the Boston Celtics. The Florida Panthers knocked out the Boston Bruins, which had this legendary regular season. Mm-hmm. And so here we sit, suddenly finding myself rooting more for the Denver Nuggets and the Vegas Golden Knights than I ever thought that I would.
But absolutely. And the thing is, it shows again. I mean, that's why the Bucks fired Coach Bud. I mean, it shows that regular season has a much smaller percentage of what ultimately matters in these pro sports right now. It's all about the playoffs. And it's sad in a sense, because I think in some ways that if you're able to go 6-7 months and show that over 82 games that you are the best team, that should mean more than it apparently does, because right now it just comes down to, can you win a best of seven series?
And true.
Down to.
Yeah, no, it's all about turning yourself into a tournament team. I mean, look, everybody, the Lakers were in, like, the Los Angeles Lakers midway through the season were in 13th place. You know, there was no way they were going to make it to the, and they almost made it all the way, because again, it's all about the timing. All right, little closer to home now. What have you been up to, either covering sports or maybe even engaged in some? I don't know. Maybe you've hit the golf ball around.
I did hit the golf ball around for the first time in a couple of years over the weekend. That was fun. But the big news, I mean, the thing I'm looking forward to today, in addition to my program, but when I get done with my program, I'm heading over to Wausau West. They start their playoff run today, playing Marshfield. So we'll have that game today on Bow Falls Radio. So I'll be on from 2 to 4, then boom, head over to Wausau West and then be back on the air for a 5 o'clock first pitch over at Wausau West as the playoffs begin for them. And, you know, it's an exciting time. We have, regional play. We have still Newman Catholic in softball. We hope in sectional play today. So hopefully at least one or two try to make it to a state tournament. But it's going to be a beautiful day. And that's the thing about, you know, spring sports. Is it's nice to be outside, especially a day like it's going to be today, to have a playoff baseball game. It's the stuff that I live for, I guess is the way to put it.
And isn't it funny that the price that you have to pay to get there is that those early spring seasons have the threat of snowstorms. It's cold, it's wet. And then you get to the end of it and suddenly it's like, it feels like it was all worth it after all.
Yeah. It, actually, you have to think about making sure you have a little sunscreen or else you're going to get burnt. That's how far we've come here. You know, I'm sure it was over there as well. I mean, just this weekend, it was summer.
Oh, I know. It was great. And in fact, last Thursday afternoon was the first time that we'd taken the pontoon out and tooled around Lake Wissota. And I didn't mention it at the time on Friday morning, but I always put, it's from my old TV anchoring days, I always put a little bit of powder on my nose and forehead so it's not, you know, so shiny. But I got so much sun on Thursday that basically I had to, you know, do the full facial makeup thing to not look like, people's computer screens were out of balance and had an entirely red face. I mean, it wasn't sunburned, but it was awfully close. You really have to remember the sunscreen. Reminds me of when I was anchoring at 13 in Eau Claire. And when I got my first Jeep Wrangler, and I've had three of them now, I love them, you know, get them over the years. And I drove a friend down to Milwaukee. We were going to what was then Miller Park. It had just opened up. And so it was a beautiful day, sunny, had the top down on the Jeep. And my friend just laughed at me because like every 20, 30 miles or so, I'd have to take the off ramp and reapply sunscreen on my face because we were driving, you know, into direct sun all the way down there. And I said, I can't show up on TV tomorrow with a completely sunburned face. It's, you know, you've got that nice broad brimmed Brewers cap on right now. You can't wear that anchoring the news, unfortunately.
I know. But it's the 2 or 3 months that you actually have to worry about something like that.
It's, you know what? And it's a worry I will take because
most of the year, no, don't have to worry about that at all.
This is why we put up with winter and everything is for just this kind of thing. Chad Holmes, 2 to 4 weekdays on Bull Falls Radio. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
For a few more days.
That's right. The big move is next Monday. Okay. We'll be getting into that as well. Thank you, sir. Talk to you later.
Bye.
All right. Yeah, that's right. We have big programming changes coming up to tell you about, but we've run out of time today. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday.